I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Ashley Hess. Ashley is an attorney with the law firm of Baker & Hostetler, but he's also the president of an organization called the Association for Corporate Growth, also known as ACG. We have an event, Ashley, on May 22nd, this Wednesday. It's called our Dealmaker of the Year Award Winner Ceremony.
This is our large event for the year. This is our 14th year of the Dealmaker Awards. And what we do with this event is that we recognize those in the Cincinnati business community who have been engaged in mergers and acquisitions, joint ventures, and other divestiture transactions. The winners for this year's awards include the E.W. Scripps Company, Cintas Corporation, iNet Interactive, Devacor Medical Products, the Likens Companies, Joe Rippey, River Cities Capital Funds, and the Hamilton County Development Company.
And you know, it really is a who's who of business community here in Cincinnati. It is an amazing event, and it's just a lot of fun as well, isn't it?
It absolutely is. In fact, we hear year after year that the cocktail reception, which goes from 5 until 7 o'clock, is the place to see and be seen and to make connections with those that perhaps you don't run into every day or every month. And it really just brings out a number of people, not only from the Cincinnati business community, but people from the region. We have people who come down from Chicago, Cleveland, Columbus, Louisville, etc. It's very, very well attended. I was just attending Intergrowth in Orlando a couple of weeks ago, and I talked to a couple of private equity folks from Chicago and also from Boston, and they knew about it and had it on their calendar, and they were going to make sure that they made it down as well.
And you know, even if you aren't currently looking to sell your business or to buy a business, it's just great contacts to make when and if you ever are in that situation.
ACG is a global organization. It was founded in 1954. Currently, they have just over 14,000 members worldwide. And these are chapters in most major metropolitan cities. There are chapters in South America, Asia, and Europe. And ACG recently did a study, and they found that 75% of ACG members have within the past year done business with another ACG member. So it's a place where people come together to make connections for general business activity as well as just buying and selling businesses.
Well, can anybody be a member of ACG?
Of the Cincinnati chapter, the answer to that is yes. And we've taken the approach that we want to be inclusive and we want, you know, an energetic and engaged membership. And so we go with this big tent philosophy. And there are ACG chapters that are what are known as approval chapters. And this may be the country club model where you have to do interviewing or you have to be invited to be a member or there can be only certain classes of members. And we have decided not to go with that model because we think that it makes our chapter better to be inclusive and bring in people with more ideas. And it also just helps for people to make connections that way.
This particular organization, at least for me personally, has been probably the best organization to be involved with to really generate contacts, to really help me be a better advisor to my clients. It's just fabulous.
That's absolutely true. And again, this is something we hear from all of our members, you know, day in and day out, that ACG is a place where you can learn a lot and you can also meet a number of people in this business community that you're going to do business with in the future. And they're going to make referrals and connections for you.
Folks would like information about how to attend the Dealmaker of the Award ceremony. What's the information they can look it up?
Well, they can find us on the internet at acgcincinnati.org, or you can also call 866-500-ACGC.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Ashley Hess. Ashley is a partner with the law firm Baker Hostetler. And Ashley's here today really in his role as president of the Association for Corporate Growth. And Ashley, this Wednesday, you have the Dealmaker Award, which is a celebration of success in the mergers and acquisitions area for lots of companies that are getting awarded this week. But there's lots of other events that ACG sponsors, one of which is near and dear to my heart, and that's the golf outing. And that's this July 15th. And there's still time for people to get involved with that, isn't it?
The golf outing is at the Triple Crown Country Club on July 15th. And if you haven't played the Triple Crown Country Club, it is a magnificent golf course. It's always in excellent shape, and they just do a great job with that event. But in addition to the golf outing, we have our monthly lunches, which may be what we're most well known for. And we have had just an all-star lineup of speakers in the last couple of years. We've had Terry Lundgren, the CEO of Macy's. We've had David Jones, one of the co-founders of Humana, Michael Fisher, Rich Baney, Greg Hardman. I mean, these are people in this community who are business leaders and who are creating jobs and helping through their involvement in the community to make Cincinnati a great place to live.
The information and the learnings that you can get when you attend these luncheons are just tremendous.
That's true. I compare our lunches to reading a great business book. You understand how these people have navigated their careers, how they've helped grow their businesses, and they share the successes and setbacks that they've had. And that's what's really great about these.
Another event that I also enjoy participating in is the ACG Cup. And that really involves students in some of our area universities when business people go in and help students and actually judge a business case competition that involves mergers and acquisitions.
Yes, the ACG Cup is something that we've been doing for about 5 years now. It's business students from NKU, Miami University, the University of Cincinnati, and Xavier University who come together and have a competition both within the schools, and then the schools compete against each other to actually win the cup. And it's absolutely tremendous to watch these students develop. And what we hear from them after this event is that's really a capstone for them, something where they apply what they've learned in business school. And it also helps them make connections with people in this business community.
Well, it's great for the students, but it's also great if you're in the mode of wanting to hire some pretty sharp financial students.
It is a great event that we put on to help our students, but also our businesses, to keep bright minds here in our region.
That's true. And that is one of the goals of the event, is to put a spotlight on the talent in these local business schools.
How do you like it, Ashley? Your year's almost been up. I sat in your shoes a few years ago. As much as I enjoyed my time as the president, it was like having another job. I mean, how do you feel about your time as president?
It's been a tremendous amount of work. It has been a wonderful experience, though, to work with the people on our board of directors. We have 18 people on our board who are just leading professionals in this business community. And in many ways, I'm just a coordinator in chief and let the people on our board generate these great ideas, run these committees. And as you know, the ACG has an endless list of volunteers who are helping to run this organization and really make it what it is. So a lot of work, but I'll certainly miss it when it's over.
And a couple of key dates. Again, Wednesday is the Dealmaker Awards ceremony. Still opportunities for people to go to that.
That's right. 5 to 8:30 at the Hyatt Regency Cincinnati.
And the golf outing?
It's July 15th, and the proceeds of the outing do go to charity.
Again, you can go to www.acgcincinnati.org and find out all the information. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Crystal, we've often talked about the problems that American consumers have in general with credit card debt, how important it is to try to eliminate that or reduce it and pay off those high-rate credit cards. But it's not unique to individuals. There's a lot of small businesses out there that have credit card debt that's pretty expensive. In fact, the average small business credit card has a $12,000 balance, and typically that interest rate on that is somewhere between 12 and 21%. So it's very expensive borrowing.
It is. It's extremely expensive borrowing. So it's just not a good long-term plan to carry balances from month to month on your credit card. The better option would be to develop a line of credit, a relationship with a bank, a more traditional type of loan, which comes generally at a much lower interest rate.
Yes, and in my experience, what's happened with small businesses typically is they have credit card debt because that's the easy debt to get. That's the easy credit to get. But they need to take the next step and line up a bank, get a line of credit, get overdraft protection, get whatever they can get in terms of a line of credit and start building that up. That's going to be much less expensive than the credit card.
It is. And a lot of it just becomes taking the time to develop a relationship with a banker, know what criteria, what lending requirements that your banker is going to want from you, then start taking steps and action to be able to do whatever it takes to get that line of credit. Because as you mentioned, many small businesses, especially those that are young, use the credit card first because they can't get any other type of credit. But the key is then to graduate from that type of debt to a more traditional debt that's certainly a lot less expensive.
Well, and the key is to develop a relationship with your banker, let them understand your business, help them understand your business, help them understand why you need a line of credit. The reason's got to be for something besides funding a loss and probably funding your salary. It's got to be to fund an opportunity for your business to grow and make more money.
And certainly, before you approach any banker, have some type of a business plan, some type of a projection. Make sure that you have a good story to tell and allow your banker to take some ownership in the idea. A banker is a critical part of your team. And sounds self-serving, but in addition to a banker, an accountant, an attorney, because bankers get a little more confidence in a business owner when they've surrounded themselves with advisors that help them understand better how to grow their business profitably.
Well, and just like an individual has to build their credit history, a business has to build theirs. So you can use financing, equipment financing, to help build your credit record to give you credibility with the banker.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, as we all know, the values of many companies over the last few years have just been like a roller coaster. They were up, then they were down, now they're going back up. So it really leads us to the conversation about when a business should encounter and actually undertake a business valuation to get a firm idea of what their business is worth.
Well, there's lots of times when you need a valuation. You know, maybe you're buying or selling a business. That's one time when a valuation comes in handy.
Gifting a business to family or some relative would also give rise to the need for a valuation.
Divorce sometimes causes a need for valuation if the stock is in question in a divorce.
And certainly death, unfortunately. A marriage would also be sometimes when you would need a valuation potentially.
Yes, because you're anticipating that divorce.
That divorce, right?
But some companies get valuations for purposes of benchmarking because they want to know, you know, where the value is at a certain point in time. And then periodically they renew that valuation so they can see what progress they've made. Because as a business owner, I think your goal is to increase the value of your business.
Yes, and it's critical that you understand what the value of your business is today if you really are serious about taking steps to enhance that value. There may be things in your business that you don't even realize that's driving the value down. So once you get your arms around that and understand how the valuation of your business actually is produced, then maybe you can take steps to enhance the value of your business. Because if your ultimate goal is to grow that business, which most business owners do have that goal, then you need to know how to get there.
And using a rule of thumb for a business valuation is not a particularly good idea because those are averages basically based on your industry. They don't necessarily indicate what the value of your particular business is.
Yes, and it's really not just about getting your handle exactly on what the value is. The real purpose of a business valuation when you're using it for growth is to dig in deep, understand what the value drivers are, what you need to be doing to increase those value drivers for your business in your industry. Because if you're planning on exiting your business in some fashion, whether it be through a sale or a gift, you need to understand how to drive the value of your business up.
For instance, if your value is discounted because 30% of your business is with one customer, therefore it's worth less than if you had a more diversified customer base. Maybe the learning you get from that is, hey, I need to diversify my base. I don't want to get rid of that customer, but I want to grow the rest of my business.
You know, so many people don't realize that. They think it's a great thing to have all of their eggs in one basket, all their business with one customer, which is a wonderful thing if you're in that position to have a big customer. But you're right, it drives the value down. A potential buyer is going to pay you less because you do have so much of your business with one customer.
There's lots of drivers of valuations, but generally, it's cash flow, ultimately. That's usually what determines the value of the business, whether it's future cash flow.
Exactly. So many people think, because my business has performed this way in the past, that certainly it's going to be worth X in the future. And clearly, historical performance is a measurement, and it's actually certainly one thing that you look at. But a buyer is going to pay for future cash flow and future profits, not what happened in the past. So if you're a business owner and you've seen the value of your business swing up and down over the last few years, this is really a very good time to go forward, get a valuation, understand what your value drivers are so that you can enhance the value of your business in the future. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Jim Cunningham. Jim is the executive director of CCAP, which is Cincinnati's angel capital hub. And you assist the Queen City Angels. And Jim, you do so many things for entrepreneurs in our community. I'm just very delighted that you're our guest today. Many people listening have no clue what the Queen City Angels are.
The Queen City Angels is a group of individuals that invest in startup companies that have high growth potential. So it's a group of people, most of whom were entrepreneurs in their own right. They've now sold their company, or it's running to the point where they have time to look at deals as well as manage the company. And so we've started this with six people back in 2001, and we've now grown to over 50 members. So we've got a good crew of people that are actively investing. We did 14 investments last year, which is a high total for angel groups. Very happy to play a role in the entrepreneurial ecosystem here in Cincinnati.
You also have a boot camp for entrepreneurs. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. I guess you have one coming up in June.
We do. It's our lucky 13th annual entrepreneur boot camp. As we say, we helped entrepreneurs back before it was cool to do that.
Before it was sexy, huh?
Yeah, but we're happy to see the ecosystem's grown around us since then. But we've, as of last year, we've trained over 500 entrepreneurs, we're very proud to say. We usually have a capacity of about 40 entrepreneurs. The session this year is, as always, 2 days. It's June 3rd and 4th. And the goal of it is to do two things: to teach entrepreneurs what they need to know and to introduce them to the local people who they need to know. So all of our speakers are local, and we've got strategic marketing people. We've got, for example, Krista Nair, who I've been on here before, was I call her the queen of digital marketing in Cincinnati, and she just won one of the 40 Under 40 awards this year. We've got really a crew of people like that that are outstanding in their fields, along with investors, venture capitalists, and the like. For a day and a half, they talk to you, and then the second afternoon, you get to sit down in a breakout session with an investor and one of these professionals and bounce your ideas off of them. Ask them questions about things you heard during the boot camp, or ideas about how to raise money, what appeals to investors, how to hire people, whatever your current issues are. You get an hour to bounce that off of people in a one-on-one setting. And we found that to be a very popular feature of the boot camp.
Who should attend? Should you have to be a startup in terms of not even starting your business yet? Should you already be in business?
Well, we see a variety of people, and I think you can be as early as still thinking about whether to quit your day job and do this. And maybe sometimes the most value we give to people is convince them to keep their day job. But for the most part, it's people who've taken an idea and they're starting to work on it, or they're out there developing the product. Maybe they have a couple of customers, and now they're at the point where they need to learn, how do I hire people? How do I compensate people? What kind of systems and processes do I need? How do I get beyond seat of the pants operations to do strategic planning? We've got an expert on that. And basically, how do you build a growth company or a real company that's going to achieve success? There's nothing like getting advice from somebody who's actually run a company, because they've seen it all. Whatever your issue is, they've dealt with it. And so we bring a couple dozen of the investors in that second day to meet with the companies in these breakout sessions.
And again, Jim, the days are?
June 3rd and 4th.
What's the contact information?
It's www.thecircuit.net.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Jim Cunningham. Jim is the executive director of CCAP and also with Queen City Angels. You all are sponsoring a boot camp June 3rd and 4th, which is the 13th boot camp you've done. And maybe you could tell us about some of the people who have been through your boot camp and have had some degree of success.
I think in a nutshell, Tom, the people that should come is anybody who is starting their first company, or anybody who has not raised money from strangers before, because it's hard to get a perspective on what investors are looking for until you talk to them. And you don't want the first time to be when you're asking them for money, because once they say no, it's too late. So this is a chance to really get an introduction to them. One of the best known people who attended the boot camp is Candace Klein, who's the CEO of SomoLend and has also founded the Bad Girl Ventures nonprofit. Candace is now a national celebrity in the peer-to-peer lending. She's been on this program more than once, and she's going to chair a panel called Ask the Entrepreneurs at the boot camp. So we're proud of her. That's in the peer-to-peer lending, which is cutting edge. On the life sciences side, I'm very proud of Joe Reynolds and Spineform. Queen City Angels invested in that company the day it was formed, and they have an innovative solution for curvature of the spine in teenagers, which can be a really tragic condition. And this is much more, not only more effective, but much less invasive and much less intrusive into a teenager's life. So they're in human trials now, and that's something I think we are all going to be proud of.
The boot camp is just a remarkable resource, and certainly if you have started a business, thinking about starting a business, it's a must-go-to event, not only to learn, as you're mentioning, but just the contacts, the relationships that you can make all there in one space for a day and a half.
I'm happy that you appreciate that, because we have all local speakers, and the reason is that when the entrepreneur leaves, not only has she learned a lot from what the speakers have said, but she's had the opportunity to connect with local people who can continue to help her achieve success. One of the great things about being in the Midwest is people are helpful, and we get a lot of volunteers to continue working with companies after the boot camp.
What does an entrepreneur do after they've attended the boot camp?
Well, they certainly use what they've learned to continue to build their company. We have monthly sessions or one-on-one sessions called Morning Mentoring, as you know. And so often a company will work on its plan for 2 or 3 or 6 months and then come back to have 2 one-hour individual mentoring sessions with investors and professionals. And the smart people do that 2 or 3 times, maybe every 6 months, so they can keep building their company, with the side benefit that if investors are watching you do it, you have a lot more credibility with them when it comes time to raise funds.
Absolutely. And if you let them take some ownership in your company along the way in terms of ideas and things like that, it can't do anything but help you when you really go make the ask.
When an investor sees that you've employed one of his ideas in your business, he thinks you're really smart.
A genius, huh?
A genius, and the type of person he wants to invest in.
Jim, if folks listening would like more information about the boot camp, which is going to be June 3rd and 4th, what's the contact information?
It's on our website at www.thecircuit.net.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Mike Zipfel. Mike is the founder and president of Zipfel Mortgage Group. Also joining us is Blake Zering. Blake is a mortgage planner at Zipfel Mortgage Group. And Mike, a lot of people get really excited about interest rates because they've gotten so low, even though they've ticked up a little bit lately. They're still at almost historic lows. But some people who have rental property still aren't getting anywhere near those lower rates. Maybe you can help people understand what's the difference between a mortgage on your house and the rates you get with that and a mortgage on rental property or investment property.
The investment property mortgages always come at a premium. And the reason behind that is if someone were to run out of money, they're going to pay for their own house first. And the banks know that. So when it comes to investment property, it's a little bit more riskier of an asset to lend on. Therefore, they charge a slightly higher interest rate. Typically, it's somewhere about 0.75 points or a point higher than what you can get on an owner-occupied residence.
It's not as easy to finance either, is it? I mean, you typically don't have to have more equity in a rental property than you might be required to have in your residence?
Absolutely, especially when you're purchasing a home. The mainstream banks require that you have a 20% down payment, where if you're buying a house to live in, you can get away with just a 5% or maybe even a 3% down payment.
Say you own rental property and you want to just refinance your principal residence. Does the rental property complicate the process?
It can. The way that the banks underwrite, they require that you have a history of 2 years of rental income in order to show that income to offset the mortgage obligation. Whereas, you know, your owner-occupied residence, the standards are a little bit more relaxed.
Do you think, from an investor standpoint, is it something that if someone's contemplating getting involved in the real estate investment area, they want to understand what it's really going to cost? Can they really borrow this kind of money? How much is the interest rate charge? Do you work with people like that when they're even starting to think about what's all involved in that process?
Absolutely. And I try to give people a pretty clear picture about what it entails. A lot of people think, oh, I'll just buy some investment property. There's economies of scales that are involved. And if you don't go down that road and continue down that road, it can be a losing battle. But if you think that it's something that you want to pursue and continue to pursue, it's, you know, a lot of people have made a lot of money in real estate.
For sure, if you look at a common theme amongst a lot of wealthy individuals, whether they be business owners, real estate always has been, at least historically, one of those assets in their bucket.
Absolutely. It pays you over time. You know, the tax benefits to owning rental real estate, it can be really good.
What are some of the tricks that you should have when you're trying to get financing, whether it be for your residence or for rental property?
I think number one is starting with your time horizon in the home. People get too fixed on, I've got to have a fixed rate that's going to last me for 30 years. When if you know that your horizon's not going to be that long, you can switch to an adjustable rate product that will be a point, maybe a point and a half lower, and it'll save you a ton of money in the short term. That and avoiding closing costs are our two biggest philosophies when it comes to sitting down with someone to plan out a mortgage.
Well, you mentioned avoiding closing costs. I think we'd all like to avoid closing costs. What does that involve?
Absolutely. There's a correlation, you know, looking at the interest rate, what lenders can offer, very close correlation between you can have either higher closing costs, lower interest rate, or vice versa. And the pendulum usually swings on those two characteristics.
Sure, yeah. You basically look at all the options. You can go, you know, 3.25% with a certain amount of interest rates, or do I go 4% with no interest rates? Find the break-even point between the two options and go from there.
If people would like to get in touch with you, learn more about Zipfel Mortgage Group, what is your contact information?
Sure, they can give us a call at 513-321-0111 or find us on the internet at www.zipfelmortgage.com.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Milton Dehoney. Milton is the city manager for the city of Cincinnati. He serves as the chief executive officer for the city. And Milton, I know you've been in that job since 2006. As you've worked your way through a recession and some of the cuts that have happened in your funding sources, especially the ones that you can't control, such as the Ohio estate tax, that used to be a pretty decent part of the Cincinnati budget, I would assume. And 2013 is the first year you're doing without it. How's that impacted you?
It's really had a tremendous impact on the local budget. Our budget deficit that we've been working to close was $35 million. If you take away the money that we lost as a result of the estate tax, the local government fund, the change in tangible property tax, our budget deficit would have only been $12 million. So the bulk of the deficit for this year is a result of change in state policy. You know, that's not a complaint about what happened. It's just a reality of the dramatic impact that it had.
It just seems like it's a lot to take out all at once. When you combine the elimination of money coming in from the estate tax, which I would assume is really you're going to fill that next year, because 2013 is the first year there is no more estate tax. And so right. I would assume it's a lagging effect.
It is a lagging effect, so there might be some additional monies coming our way as a result of estates that are already in the process of being settled but haven't yet closed out. I don't have any idea what that is, but it is fair to say that we were getting several million dollars a year from the estate tax, several million dollars a year from the local government fund. And so when you don't have those things, and they have been, they did phase out the local government fund and was not all at once. It's hard for cities to be able to adjust, but nevertheless, we have to do that, and we're going to do that.
What are some of the innovative things that you've tried to do to compensate for these revenue sources?
During my tenure, I have been very aggressive about growth. I've changed the way we do economic development. I've changed the way we do all of our deal making. And so we have tried to either help existing companies grow that are already here, and we've also had some success at attracting new companies into the city. You know, a prime example Graders is an institution here in Cincinnati. Been here over 140 years. They needed to grow, expand, do a manufacturing facility. We loaned them $10 million in order to be able to do their plant rather than risk them moving to another state. It's not something you do every day, but we felt like it was important for Graders growth to occur in Cincinnati. So we made that happen.
So how do you choose?
Well, most of the time we're not doing loans like that, but that's a homegrown company that, as I said, is an institution locally. But we have a number of incentives that we make available. And what we really look at, what is the long-term impact to the city? How many jobs will it create? How much investment will it create? The more people are working, the greater we expand the economic pie and helps you overcome things like the loss of state funding.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. We're delighted today to have as our guest Mary Miller. Mary is the CEO of Jancoa Janitorial Services. And Mary, you have quite the story. You were a single mom, you had children, and now you've come down the path of life. You've influenced and touched so many people's lives. It's just remarkable. You were recently honored as a YWCA Career Woman Achievement. Let's talk about why you are so passionate about helping others.
It's funny you say that, Crystal. Somebody asked me the other day, why is it so important for me that people dream, that they're excited about their future? And the gentleman happened to be bald, and I just looked at him and said, I don't know, why are you bald? I mean, honestly, we get our experiences based on our life path, and what happens to us really forms our opinions, and I think we are all born with a passion. I finally got to the point where I looked in the mirror and I said, okay, what am I made to do? What do I love to do? And how can I incorporate that in what I do every day? And honestly, Life Success Seminars is one of the best places that helped me start that in my own path to stop working on doing what other people expected of me.
But what you love to do is probably not janitorial services.
No! Good point. But you know, that pays the bills. Our company's 43 years old and we are a family business. We have three second-generation members in our family business, and the Gehring Center is helping us to make sure we're still in business, you know, the next 20, 30, 50 years. So that's been really powerful. So what's really empowers me is dreams. What I have found in all the speaking that I do is I have not found one person yet has told me that being a janitor was on their list of what they wanted to be when they grow up. It's always a transitional job on the way to someplace else, but they just get caught up in that cycle of life and get busy and then get in survival mode and they forget they were on their way to someplace else.
And it's you and your story and your family story, your company's story that inspired the book, The Dream Manager. Matthew
Correct.
Kelly wrote that a few years ago.
Matthew kept telling us we had great stories about the programs we were doing with our employees, helping them buy homes, many first-generation homeowners, helping get the driver's license, their GEDs, to get clear and help them connect to something bigger in their future. We're working with United Way with some of their programs today with workforce development so that they can move out beyond and make more money than what they do with us. And Matthew kept saying, these are great stories. You should write a book. And finally, he realized he's the author. And so we worked with him and he wrote the book and he did an amazing job.
And Mary, I know your company's recently recognized through Bridges because of the diversity and the inclusion. What'd you have? How many people from different countries work in your company over the last?
Well, we have 340 full-time employees and 70 of them are immigrants. We have over 50 countries that are represented by our employee base. Lots of different languages, but they all learn to work together. We have one building where there's one gentleman from Nepal, two Hispanics, and the gentleman from Africa. And when our dream manager goes over there and brings them Coke and they talk about dreams, even though they all have these three different languages, they are all on the same page, mm-hmm. and the customer is completely happy with the quality of service because they're working together to get the results.
What advice do you have for people so that they can be like Mary Miller?
Dream. When I was a single woman with three children and had just lost my job, I kept pictures on my refrigerator of what I wanted in my life. You know, a certain car, convertible. Now I'm on my fifth convertible. You know, I have a certain type of home and just really getting clear on what I want and be willing to do the work to go after it. And it's amazing what you can do when you have that determination and when you stop trying to be a people pleaser. So I know that if I make God happy with the choices I make, my life will work. And it takes a lot of pressure off.
folks listening today would like to learn more about your company, Jancoa Janitorial Services, or even you?
Well, we do have a website, www.jancoa.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Susan Branscombe. Susan is the founder and president of Q10 Quest Commercial Capital Corp. And that's a long name for basically a business that helps people get financing primarily for real estate. How's that been lately? Is it brisk?
It is brisk. It is the market is not back as strong as it was in 2007, but so much better every year since 2009. Interest rates are down in the threes, fixed for 10 years, and even as low as the high twos in some cases. But so it's a great time to lock interest rate, and it's active. We have a big pipeline.
Is it still more difficult than it was pre-recession to get financing?
Yes, lenders are pretty conservative on their underwriting and looking at properties pretty closely and borrowers pretty closely to make sure they don't make mistakes in their defaults.
Do you think, Susan, that the commercial real estate that banks had to take back and foreclose on, or do you think that that inventory has been eliminated, or do you still think that banks are holding on to some of that property?
They're still holding on to it. I think there was a lot of right-sizing going on. You know, to extend the loan, they would require a pay down, and so that's been going on, amortization and so forth. And as the market has improved, values have come up. The loan-to-values are much better.
So where do you see some of the biggest activity?
Yeah, we finance all property types, multifamily, retail, commercial, and industrial. And multifamily has been hot lately. I mean, there has been a lot of trades in multifamily. Lenders like multifamily loans. Office and hotel are coming back. Those are properties that have become easier to finance, and underwriting is less conservative.
What's it like being a woman in the real estate business?
It's a fairly male-dominated industry, and I'm one of two women that started their own company in this industry. So the mortgage banking side is very male-dominated, but sometimes people look at me and say, who's this woman calling me? And then they start working with me and I'm Susan. You know, it's not like I'm a woman or a man or there's a gender issue. But, you know, you just do the best you can. You work hard and, you know, and good things will come. Success will come.
And speaking of that, you are writing a book about some of these types of issues and how your life is been evolving.
Yes, and the business has grown. Just advice for young women. The issues are different for young women than they were 33 years ago when I started my career. And so advice for them as they climb the corporate ladder, and entrepreneurial advice as well.
So I have a daughter who's just graduating from high school,
yes,
getting ready to go to college. What advice would you have for someone of that age?
Someone of that age is don't let her gender stand in the way of doing anything. Don't even think about her gender. She should do what she wants to do and just go ahead with her passion and work hard, and she will succeed.
How do you mentor a young woman who loves the idea of having children? She still loves the idea of having some flexibility, but still wants to go full gang ahead with their career.
I have two children, 26 and 20, and I worked full-time at that time. You have to have a spouse or partner that is doing at least half of what has to be done if your career is important to you. It can be done. And it can be done on a part-time basis, if she wants to take some time off. That all can be done. And men, too. I mean, if you're going to be traveling all the time, you're going to miss your kids are going to miss you. So those are very, very important years for children. And you have to find a way to balance it.
Susan, if someone listening would like to learn more about your organization, like to find out what types of rates and financing you may have, what is your contact information?
Our main number is 513-985-4000, and our website is QuestCCC3Cs.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.